Hello, welcome to Show Me Your Mic, the podcast where I talk to other podcasters about their podcasts. You can find it online at goodstuff.fm/smym or on Twitter at smym_fm. I'm your host, Chris Enns, and for this episode, I've got Tyler Stallman. He's the host of Cameras or Whatever, a podcast that talks to a little more advanced photographers, not the 101 beginner stuff, but a little more detail, a little more in-depth, and kind of like this show, I guess. I guess I don't go too geeky either, but we have a great chat about his podcast as well as the internal video podcast that he does for his place of employment. So hope you enjoy the show. Welcome if you're here from the iTunes featured section in the How to Podcast part of iTunes. Glad to have you. Enjoy the show. Welcome to the show, Tyler. First of
hey,
all.
Hey, thanks, Chris.
It's good to have a fellow Canadian and even more fellower prairie. Do Calgary people think of themselves as the prairies or they think of themselves as the mountains?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's flat enough around here. We're still kind of in the prairies. But we have these amazing Chinooks that come through, which I don't know if they happen anywhere else, but it's this thing where super warm winds flow in and bring us to much warmer temperatures than we should be, than we deserve to be in Canada.
So. Yeah, that's maybe the part where I sense the looking down from Calgary friends look down their noses at us cold in Saskatchewan here as we, but we've gotten
I was excited when I first listened to the first few shows and realized that you were in Canada, because it doesn't seem often enough that I get into something and then it turns out they're also up here.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And I don't know if folks often realize or recognize that I assume we have a strong enough accent, but it feels like we have no accent. That's what it feels like to me. But yeah, the other two guys who do good stuff with me are definitely, you know, not, well, definitely, I guess, whatever. They're Americans, but so people kind of assume by association that I'm also an American. But luckily for us all, there's one Canadian here at least holding down the humility. So, your podcast that you've started, which is Cameras and Stuff.
Cameras or whatever.
Sorry.
Which I right away, I'm going to acknowledge is the worst name, but I had been hung up long enough on, you know, I need to get a podcast started and I don't want to not do it because I can't think of a good name. So, I'm stuck with it, but
yeah. And that's, I think, also one of those things too, where you can spend forever trying to think of an amazing name and then it's just like, whatever you decide is what it'll become. And
yeah, I think if the Foo Fighters had the career that they did with the name like Foo Fighters, then you know, hopefully I can grow this a little bit.
Yeah, exactly. And I guess in preparing for the show, it was actually a great sort of bit of a turn of events, because I didn't have a guest, and then last minute yesterday afternoon, all of a sudden you booked in to be on the show today, and so that's in my sort of excuse, I guess, for maybe not being as prepared, but it's still not a great excuse.
That's all right. It was very last minute, and thanks for bringing me in so quickly.
Yeah. So, tell me, I guess, a bit about where the show sort of started from for you.
Well, I actually had a show a while ago, probably around 2007. I was doing a show on my own, and it kind of fizzled out. Just the motivation of doing something completely by myself. It was really easy to make a lot of excuses why not to record. And it disappeared. And then I had this really amazing experience this summer at, I was in New York, about to go to the top of the Rock, and the guy operating the elevator kind of gave me this like, hey, I recognize you. Like, are you famous? I'm like, no. Like, I'm a guy, I'm from Canada. You don't,
we're not famous.
He's like, no, you used to have a podcast. And I was just, you know, I was just shocked. Like, I'm in one of the biggest cities in the world, and somebody just listened to my show from years ago that I'd abandoned. So,
based on your voice, do you think, or was it he recognized you from Album Art or whatever?
From Album Art, okay, and yeah. It's being photography. There's photos around and linking to websites and stuff. So,
right.
it's the most minor celebrity possible, but it was enough to feel like, you know, somebody actually was paying attention, and maybe I should get back into it.
Nice. And so now you're about seven episodes in, and what's the motivation? I'm reading it, but just so folks who are listening know, what's the sort of focus and motivation for the show?
Well, the idea is a photography podcast for for photographers that are kind of already working maybe or already shooting a lot. A lot of the podcasts I was trying to listen to about the topic of photography were trying to get people into it, a lot of 101 stuff, and or just looking at it from angles that I don't really. And I just felt like my view, there must be somebody else with my view of looking for experienced people that are already working in the industry, giving their perspective on things they're working with every single day. And then some of the other, there's another really great show on Taking Pictures, which is on the 5x5 network. And they just kind of have a different angle that's a little bit of a more artistic background to it, whereas mine is maybe a little bit more business oriented, and trying to, you know, make a living off of your own art. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah, Bill Wadman actually was on this show. I want to say maybe in the episode 30s, somewhere in there. I'll try to find the link and put it in the show notes too. But
I missed that one, so I'm gonna go back.
Back in the archives, back in the day. Who knows? That's probably a year or so ago, at least now, I think. But and I that's what I appreciated, I guess, about the sort of bio for your show, is that it does seem like there's a lot of, like, here's how to get into photography. And it's kind of like the going after the Google Juice SEO value of mm-hmm. how to photograph a thing, X, Y, or Z, or whatever.
Well, it was a decision to not do that, because I know I'm cutting off a much bigger audience. There's mm-hmm. there's way more people that are not photographers yet than people that currently are and would even understand some of the words that we throw around, right? Like, well, really casually just drop the numbers of, you know, a 35, which can mean a 35 millimeter lens or 35 millimeter film, or, you know, we're not always clear enough to somebody that hasn't spoken this language a little bit. And by doing that, it means that we can kind of cut to the chase for people that are familiar with this, but that if you aren't comfortable with the language, you might struggle a little bit.
Yeah. And I think that's a great way to do it, approach it. Not apologizing for and having to stop every time to explain all the details. And I think that's something similar to what this show actually does, where I try not to start from the beginning every time with every guest and walk through the basics, I guess, of how to podcast or whatever. But knowing full well, obviously, that there's plenty of shows like that that are out there. And
yeah, exactly.
Stuff, so
it exists and people can find it, and like there's a big ecosystem and we can just be a part of it.
Yeah. And so how, I'm curious about your original show, just how, was it like a 2-episode run thing or just and sort of hit miss, or did you get a little further along? And
I got a bit further. I think it was about 30 episodes in, like over the course of most of a year. And it was tied into doing a lot of YouTube stuff. So I'll give my kind of like photo background,
sure.
which will give some context to it. So if you've ever heard of iStock Photo, that's based out of Calgary. And I was a designer there when it was just kind of getting started. And so shooting stock photography is really kind of where I come from. I started shooting for the site and eventually went to work for Getty Images after we were purchased, and was designing for life.com. So, you know, I've kind of been at a bunch of big photo websites. That was a lot of like the biggest experience that I had, and during that time shooting for them. So then the next one was Saatchi Online, which is for the Saatchi Art Gallery. And for that, I started doing these walkthrough videos where they were, I think, pretty well produced. Like, I put a lot of effort into teaching people on how to photograph your art. That was what it was specifically about. And I started getting just a really great response from that and putting out more content like that was just on my own, just trying to teach people how to do things that I had learned online. And for me, most of this learning came through YouTube videos, through Vimeo, and through podcasts. And so I felt like I started to have this obligation to kind of give back in this same way and let other people learn the same way that I learned. And I was doing internal videos for them. Now I'm working for, and along with my co-host, Cameron Whitman, we work at a site called Stocksy, and we sell stock photos too. But I do an internal show there as well. So I kind of do two shows, but one of them is just for our membership. And I guess that's why I didn't mention it, because you can't go find it. but together we both kind of do two shows, and I really like it. I really like the experience of being on the other end of giving out the information that I've just like sucked out of the internet.
It's a nice visual, but that's is the internal one that you're doing for Stocksy.com, is that also audio podcast, or do you do video as well with it?
That one's video. So for that, we're on Google Hangouts most of the time. That one, I've got a bit more of a solid workflow. If we're going to talk about the workflow for cameras or whatever, it's a bit of a mess. But this one is working pretty well. We kind of just record a Google Hangout, and then I try to get separate audio. So I tried a new thing on this last episode. I haven't cut together yet, but I just recorded the live audio because I know that Hangouts puts out less compressed audio live. And then the file that it saves to YouTube is much more compressed. So I'm going to splice the good live audio from the Zoom H4n that was just plugged into my computer, and I'm going to mix that in, and hopefully it'll sound nice. Other times I've done double enders with a few different video guests, which is a lot of editing to like jump back and forth between everybody, but it can be worth it. The audio, even a terrible mic, if you have the audio uncompressed, just makes the world of difference. So that's what I try to mix into it.
Nice. That is a lot of work adding video in. And I was going to ask about, you know, the idea of a stock photography site. It sort of seems like you'd need to have almost, or you'd want to have some sort of visual element to it to show off.
But I think people have said that about cameras or whatever. They're like, you're just going to talk about it? Don't you have to see it?
Right. And the one episode, like I said, obviously you didn't have a ton of time to listen to each episode, but the last episode I listened to, episode 7, I think, was on, you know, filters and workflows in using them in inside Lightroom and stuff like that. And so it is tougher to sort of, you have to be good at explaining, as I fumble over my words, good at explaining things visually without relying on a slide or a video or whatever to show exactly what you mean. But I thought your guest and what you guys discussed was great as far as pulling me. I'm a very amateur hack photographer and had played around with Lightroom and would be embarrassed probably to show photos from there. But like, even still, knowing.
Well, you know, if you got some of these filters, maybe, maybe you'd look even better.
Exactly.
We do our best to describe it. The reason I'm so passionate about listening to podcasts and have been for a long time is because I don't have time to watch nearly as many videos. You know, that's the big limiter. And it's why a lot of videos would be, you know, maximum of like 10 or 20 minutes, because it's so much more of a commitment to have your eyes and ears focused at the same time. But I have a lot of time to listen. So while I'm doing photo work or design work, I can just sit there and with my headphones on and I can get through a lot of audio episodes of different shows in a week. And again, it was one of those, I know it could be a bit more useful as a video, but I'm sure there's someone else out there like me that just doesn't have as much time to watch YouTube.
Yeah, and that's even, the nice thing about YouTube is you can look and see stats and views on other people's videos and, like, you know, popular podcasts that I know of that are, you know, hugely popular in audio form. You can look at the videos and there's 200 views or whatever.
Right.
I mean, for somebody who doesn't have any views, that's great, but for a podcast that probably has 30,000 downloads or something, it's obviously the focus needs to be on audio.
Do you ever wish that that we had the same views thing as on YouTube for podcasts? Because I always have this experience of some of my favorite shows. I'm like, how many other people are into this with me? Am I the only one that thinks this is really successful? Or do they actually, is there a group of, is there a community out there that also loves this as much as I do?
Well, that's where I think it's interesting you bring that up. I had that discussion with the other founders of Good Stuff, because I was thinking, obviously we have our own stats for our downloads, and or maybe that's not obvious, but we do. And I don't know what of any podcaster that doesn't know their own stats. There's a certain amount of vanity and ego that goes along with this. But it was a discussion I was having with them. I was like, should we just turn on because we could hook it into the website ourselves and just publicize the download numbers. Like, go visit it today and see what it, because it's one of those things that feels like we're, as if we're talking about how much we earned last year, but it's not. The same, like it is different. It's tied sometimes to sponsorship, but
I'm in favor of it. I think it'd be great if you guys led on that. And the thing is, I think that whether it feels like showing your payslip or not is kind of how you are trained on that site, because you are used to it on YouTube, so you don't blink, you don't mind. And I think it's only because it's never been exposed for podcasters that we would feel like it's strange to talk about, but.
Well, if anybody is using something like SoundCloud, it is public. Like I think maybe there's an option to flip it off if you're paying. I'm not sure, but so you can, and that's where. And even the thing like, Show Me Your Mic is in the iTunes How to Podcast section now, And so we're, you know, internally, we're obviously curious, is that going to result in a bump? Or so if you're a listener because of that, welcome here. But, you know, for thus far, we haven't seen a huge bump. And there's other factors, obviously, like, well, the most recent episode of this show was downloaded 472 times as of this recording. So whatever that means to you, doesn't it?
There it is.
Yeah. And it's, I did it. I feel so relieved now. But I mean, this show, for example, the first 30 episodes or whatever was always like 150 downloads or something. And so it's growing. It's not like in the 10,000 per episode download range that you need for like amazing sponsorship. But then that's the funny thing is like people listening to this show or other shows can obviously tell if they're getting to that level because they start talking about Squarespace or,
or well, and I had put thought into that with this show that, you know, the goal is not sponsorship. I'm not doing this to be a podtrepreneur. it would be, but it would be great. And what I thought about is that leaving that really big market of newbies off the table means that I know my audience is at a certain level. Mm-hmm. They have a certain sophistication about the topic. And I know that if I go to any sponsor, I can say like, look, anybody listening to the show understands photography and you're going to be talking directly to a group of people that are really comfortable with spending money on cameras or on camera accessories. They understand what more technical strange gear is. And that I would hope with a smaller audience, there's greater value to that audience.
Yeah. And that's certainly like, and you can do, you know, eventually at some point you can do the sort of market research thing on your audience and, you know, gauge what they're earning or whatever, if you really want to go down that road. But yeah, that's, I think the similar idea with this, I remember I was probably too early in approaching some folks, but thinking like, okay, I'm not doing the podcasting one-on-one stuff. I'm talking to podcasters generally who have gotten over that hurdle of spending money on this hobby. So going to a company like B&H or whoever it happens to be that, you know, it was, I can't remember who I approached at the time, but they weren't really interested in doing it because it just wasn't big enough or whatever the reason was. But, but yeah, I think that's, it makes sense in every other medium where when they know they're talking to specifically, rather than just throwing everything against the wall and hoping something sticks, they are able to actually talk right to the ears of the people who love, in your case, photography. Or
we should be doing a show just for the billionaire show.
Right.
You'll only be interested if you have an eight-figure income.
Exactly. Somehow pretend like we know what we're talking about.
Well, I should also, since you put it out on the, you shared it, I'll say that our latest episode is at 193 downloads right now.
Nice.
That filters one, just so that it's not only you sharing the numbers.
But that's, it's totally, it's a funny thing that, and there's like in the tech circles that I read and stuff, I know like, you can visit the site that does the sponsorship for that show says, let's say the talk show, John Gruber, I think, you know, on the sponsorship site that manages the sponsor says, this gets around, I don't remember the number, but let's say it's 50,000 downloads an episode. So that's why you're going to pay $4,000 an episode for sponsorship. And they have to put that there because otherwise they'd be fielding emails and whatever every week asking that question. So,
well, in one of the companies that I've worked for, we actually, I always try to pitch every company I work for on sponsoring podcasts because I think it's, I really do think it's the best way to communicate with an audience. So, we actually, I had them get quotes from Gruber and some other, what I consider to be sophisticated shows. So, I mean, a show like The Talk Show is a great example because anybody willing to listen to 3 hours of this. I don't like, there's a certain person and I like that person and I can feel a kinship with them and that they might like appreciate the types of products that I'm interested in getting sponsored. Unfortunately, I don't hold the purse strings at any of these companies, so it hasn't happened yet, but
yeah, it's interesting. I actually listened to, an episode or an interview with Lex Friedman, who works at the Midroll, which is sponsorship company that's our podcasting company that does sponsorship purely, and he was talking about how it has been changing now thanks to things like Serial and some of the bigger name podcasts that are hitting the mainstream more, that those discussions that he has with marketing departments is getting easier, where it used to be like he'd have to explain what a podcast is. Now he can at least say it's like Serial, and they all go, oh, well, MailChimp, right? And you know, it's at least understood, and then he has to, you know, probably convince them how much to spend or whatever. But
You know, maybe that'll become the biggest benefit of these breakout shows, the serials and the startup and all that, is that it may not even be that that many more people start listening to podcasts. I haven't come across way more normal people that are crazy about podcasts now and downloading every show they can find, but more the education of especially sponsors or the public are just being more comfortable with the term and the concept.
Yeah, and willing to put some dollars into it, knowing that there is a audience there. It's not just nerds in their basement, whatever.
Yeah.
I mean,
this it's mainstream.
Nerds in their basements making the podcast, maybe. But I'm curious with the Hangouts you mentioned. This isn't directed to your public show, but with your using Hangouts and stuff for internal production. And so you're distributing that as a video through a private YouTube channel, or do you do actually like sort of a private podcast feed, or how do you
distribute
that?
Through a private Vimeo channel, which that's actually part of the reason that it's video, is because it was hard to find something we could distribute really easily. I didn't just want to host a audio file and let people download it. Like the video, I really like the engagement that we're getting through it. So Vimeo's been great for that. If you have a pro account, you can set certain things to private, and it's only accessible through our website. So as members log in, they can go to a private area.
Nice.
It's worked out really well. I looked into it with YouTube a lot. I mean, it'd be great, because what would be helpful for us is if we could do, say, private Hangouts on air, but you can't. But the way you can only do that is that it's private, because if nobody has the URL.
Yeah.
But that's about it. And
I guess
there's some limitations there.
Yeah, you could like create a public or a private Google Plus group that everybody had to be a part of, and then you'd throw the link in there, and then, but it does create sort of a mess as far as just getting people to just, if it's going to be too hard to tune in and engage, I guess.
Yeah. Actually, I did the first two episodes of this, we recorded as Hangouts on air, and I just posted them straight to YouTube. It was this building, like I hadn't named the show yet. I was like, I have to do this. Let's just hit record. And so we did. And the great thing about Hangouts on air is you can just do the instant publish thing, and it's really informal. And I liked that experience. The only thing is I started becoming a little too much of a control freak and wanting to edit a little bit more. And to really clean up a video is a lot more time consuming than cleaning up an audio file. So generally the way I attack a show is I try to clean up the first about 20 minutes or half hour to feel the most fluid. My idea being that any new listeners are going to be less patient with ums and ahs. So
that's a good approach.
Yeah. I basically spend however much time I have before the show needs to go live, I just clean up the front. I take out the worst pauses, anything really like just awkward where you're like, I wish that had gone better.
Yeah.
And then usually you'll hear more of a raw show towards the end, because I'm like, okay, if you stuck around this long, then you must care about what we're talking about. So.
Yeah. And that's actually a great approach, because I've heard of folks who go through diligently through the whole thing to try and edit out everything. But there's a sort of natural language part of it, angle that I appreciate, of just hearing some of the, we mentioned the talk show, but like, sometimes it's a little too raw where like you can hear Gruber just chewing on something or whatever. And like, obviously he can get away with it, I guess, but that's not my style. But,
but some of the people that do it, like, Merlin Mann obviously has, or like the Snorts and Roderick on the Line, there's a lot of messiness to it, but they also speak very well.
Yeah.
They can pull it off. If I don't feel like I'm quite as eloquent, I'm not able to pull off the same amount of mistakes. So, you have to be at a certain level for that to not be distracting to be forgiving.
Is that the same for both the videos, like the internal stuff, as well as your audio?
No, the video just comes out basically as it is. The only thing, I'll take out like a big mistake or, a glitch, things like that. But other than that, it kind of comes out as it is. But for that, we have an audience that they're all people that are working at working for us. They're selling their photos through our site. So they're really, they want to hear what we're saying, and I'm not as worried about them dropping out or being disinterested. So.
Right. Oh yeah. Yeah. It's I've said before on this show that Hangouts seems like a vastly underutilized service, and as much as us audio snobs sometimes turn down our noses at some of the quality, like you were referencing earlier on there, the tools and stuff that's available to you is pretty crazy. And it's not something, I help a buddy with a podcast show that he's launching and editing out some video, like even using YouTube's online editor for a video. is painful, especially if you're used to Final Cut or whatever. The precision isn't there, that's right, for sure. Right. But all that being said, the fact that you can just literally turn on a webcam and be streaming out live to whoever wants to tune in, and then it, you know, within minutes, it's flipped around and can be watched by anybody.
Oh, it's amazing.
Yeah, it just kind of blows my mind sometimes. Maybe it's a bit of the, back in my day, we had to do X, Y, and Z feeling.
Yeah. Well, and the only real downside, the worst part about the Hangouts audio is the compression. If you just listen to the file that it saves to your YouTube account, the audio as it's happening is pretty good. I think a lot of people wouldn't necessarily hear the difference between that and Skype. It's not a big degradation. If you record what's actually happening while you broadcast.
Right. So I'm curious, actually, this with that, you're not as concerned with people aren't actually tuning in live while you're recording it, right?
No, not at
you're
all.
You're just using the tool to record or to facilitate the discussion.
Yeah, so that it can record the video with auto cutting, so that it jumps while people talk, and also so that it I can have more people. Like we actually had yesterday, we were doing, I think it's 7 people in the show. So.
Right. Which would be a mess trying to do it with, like, you know, not a mess. You can but do it with a wire.
I just wouldn't even try.
Yeah, exactly. It wouldn't happen 5 years ago or whatever. So, and so then you're recording, like you said, you're recording your audio. You have another computer with the stream being played live back.
Well, no, it's all through the same computer. I just am running out into a Zoom recorder, and it captures what was happening live at high quality.
Nice.
Yeah.
And you haven't had trouble matching that up with the video as far as...
Sync? Oh, I have trouble.
Okay.
I just put the time into it. It's not that much... It's not hard. It's just you have to go through the whole thing. It's just a bit time consuming. But that is part of my job there. So I don't mind putting in a little extra effort to get the production up. Whereas the stuff that I'm doing for the cameras or whatever, so more of my own show, I am more concerned about speed because it's in the little free time that I have. So I try to get it out as quickly as I can.
Right. Yeah. And as far as the, so are you editing it in something like Final Cut then afterwards, or what do you use to edit going back to the Hangout or the video stuff?
Yeah. Yeah. The Hangout stuff is in Final Cut. Yes.
And has the Final Cut Pro X been a good experience for you, or are you?
It has. I really like it. I've been using Premiere more lately. I've been trying to get really comfortable with it for the more advanced video stuff that I'm doing. Like this weekend, I was shooting a 4K 4K video in S-Log, meaning that like all of the color needs to be done very carefully because it looks like junk straight out of the camera, and it's really high resolution files, and it's kind of hard and complicated. And Final Cut feels like it simplifies a bit too much for that. But at the same time, it's so simple for things that are simple. I mean, with the Hangout, all you get is a single long video file, and then you're just going to layer some audio under it. And for that, it's perfect. The magnetic timeline is the fastest way I've ever found to work with anything. It wants to make the video watchable for you. Whereas with something like Premiere or the way it was in Final Cut 7, you would pull out a section of video or an audio and you could accidentally leave a big hole in your video. And Final Cut 10 really wants to keep it as watchable as possible. It doesn't let you break it.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. it helps you as best you can anyways. And
yeah.
And then there's still times when you screw up or whatever, or I screw up anyways.
Can't speak for you, but. We all screw up.
Cause it was rabbit trail, but the magnetic timeline is great, but then I forget how to say like lock a audio clip or whatever down somewhere, like music cue I'm thinking of, sorry, where maybe you don't want it to shuffle along or whatever, and then you have to go back and
can be weird sometimes. Like if a clip is locked to another clip and you don't realize, you can delete the first clip and then they both disappear.
Yeah, no,
that's the specific thing I accidentally do all the time.
Yeah, because you're as part of your, I don't know if it's your day job or your own business, you do video work as well, just looking at your site, stallman.com.
Yeah, I do.
Video as well, so it's not.
I really do like a lot of very different things. Me and my wife do our like photo and video business. We do that together. So the photography, like she shoots about half of it. And even when I'm shooting a lot, like most of the time we're working together. So She's just not as nerdy as I am. So she came on the first episode of Cameras or whatever, but doesn't care as much about the gear. So I'm the voice of the gear. Somebody's got to speak for the gear.
Right. Exactly.
Maybe me.
I know the feeling. I dragged my wife onto a podcast, the first podcast I did, to try and just, I needed a voice to talk with. Right. And well, I'm going to take a little quick break, speak of sponsors earlier, but it'll take a quick break for a sponsor, and then we'll get into a bit more of the gear they use for recording your audio podcast. This episode is brought to you by Campaign Monitor, which we talk about a lot here at Good Stuff. They've been a founding sponsor of Good Stuff. We really appreciate all their support. They make sending email super easy to your clients, to potential clients. And if you need to send an email campaign in a hurry, you can try your hand at their template builder and have a responsive email template ready in 60 seconds. With Canvas, their template builder system, you can check it out at canvas.cm. It makes it amazingly easy to get an awesome template up and then get your content in there. Because just like with podcasting, the goal is to send out the email, not to spend a whole bunch of time fudging around with divs and tables and all that garbage that web nerds like me in my day job have to mess around with. So Campaign Monitor makes your email look amazing on all sorts of devices, all sorts of browsers, and all the different email clients that are out there that people are using. You can, I've been toying with setting up a new podcast, and I set up a quick list in there with a subscriber form, sent it out to friends and people who are interested in maybe in being on this podcast, set up auto groups and interests and things like that right on the list, made it super easy to use and still looks professional enough that it's not just sending a quick email out of Outlook or mail.app or whatever. And so we use it here, Good Stuff, as well for our newsletter, goodstuff.fm/newsletter, which you can check out, sign up for if you're interested in updates from Good Stuff. And Campaign Monitor featured a recent design that we did that was by no means a professional designer involved myself and involved in that. And it was featured in one of their articles and just more of a testament to how easy it is to use our tools to make great looking emails. So thanks to Campaign Monitor for supporting Good Stuff, and show me your mic. So for the audio side, your podcast, what gear and stuff have you picked up or used as an excuse to pick up?
Well, the audio stuff, there's sort of two sides. Well, like, I have not settled on a workflow. Actually, every time we go to set up, it again feels like the exact same battle each time. But the basics are that I got the Heil PR40.
Nice.
For me, because of Leo Laporte. I know, like, Dan Benjamin recommends them a lot, but I've been really obsessed with Twit. I shouldn't say obsessed. I've loved Twit since the beginning.
And it's okay to be obsessed with something.
Yeah, I mean, so. I just feel like if it's good enough for Leo, it's good enough for me. So yeah, I think we all we kind of want to emulate those shows that we really like. And I also, when I have guests on, they're using the Shure SM58. And it's funny because I listen afterwards and I just have this feeling, I'm like, I'm not substantially better. Like, even the 58 sounds pretty nice. That's what Cameron, my co-host, is on as well. But I didn't want to ever have that feeling of that maybe it could be better. If only I had the Heil, then I would be happy. So I just wanted to jump in right away.
Well, and coming from camera gear guy, I, you know, it's probably not that foreign a concept to spend a couple bucks on gear.
That's right.
Relative to a lens, it's pretty cheap, actually.
Yeah, it's true. It's just part of the thing. And also, buying an expensive mic locks me into having to do this podcast. I can't drop out because I'll have a expensive mic sitting on my desk.
Yeah, exactly. And I always figured the way I did it to justify it was because often people ask me, like, how did you justify buying a PR40 and a mixer and stuff? And I figured if it fizzles out for me, there'll be some other podcast nerd who's just getting into this that I can pawn it off on.
That's right. Well, yeah, gear does hold its value in ways that a lot of other things don't.
Yeah, exactly.
Were you already doing shows when you got your Heil, or did you do it like before you started?
No, I had done some basics, kind of like testing. Like a show on Survivor, like sort of recapping the reality show Survivor and stuff,
right,
and just kind of like playing around and nothing sort of seriously putting it out there kind of thing, but just messing around with the basic mechanics of recording a podcast and getting it iTunes and all that kind of stuff, just to sort of know that I didn't just buy this stuff and then figure out how to
and
podcast.
Then see if you were interested. Yeah.
Yeah. So sorry, I interrupted your... Started with you got the PR40.
Yeah, and then it's on a Heil arm, and then I'm going to follow the train to, I've got an avid inbox from now Inbox is owned by a different company, but it's been great to me. It's just a, you know, simple in-out device for the computer. I have a bunch of audio stuff I already had just from video production as well. So like I have a mixer that's sitting right beside me, not plugged into anything. That's the Alesis Multimix 8. And so I've done one of the episodes, I did the whole mix minus setup where everything's running in and out of the computer. And what I discovered is it's a lot of cables. It's a really big mess. So I don't know if I like that. That's why I don't know if I'm actually even going to plug it back in. It's just the desk space gets pretty disorderly.
Yeah.
And so what I did the last one, I actually just did a really simple call recorder on both ends. And those are the easiest to cut together because it already lines up. But sometimes you end up with audio issues with their side. So other times I've done the double ender as well and had him record. So I've been actually just jumping around and trying everybody that has a successful show seems to have a completely different method of doing it. So I've kind of been testing out what everybody's described and honestly haven't settled on something that feels right for me, the balance of speed and quality.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And do you often have guests on? Like, I mean, I know you have a co-host, but do you have guests as well?
We've had guests on, I guess, three times out of, well, we recorded episode 8 now, and that'll be out soon, so we're, you know, 3 out of 8. And yeah, I try to kind of often. I know a lot of people that are passionate about this too, so I really like to bring them on as an extra voice. And so far, they've all been in here in the studio with me, so.
Oh, nice, yeah.
Yeah.
Is that your co-host is in studio as well, or?
No, he's in Washington, so.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I guess not.
Yeah. We've only met in person, I think, once, but yeah, no, he's been really great.
Yeah. Well, that's funny. That's, yeah, the guys I do with Good Stuff here, we've never met in person either. And the closest we've been is Tim and I were in opposite ends of a Minneapolis terminal one time when I was flying through. But
how did you guys connect then? How did you get to know each other without?
We were both, actually, they were on my show, on this show, actually, when it first started. And I think was the transition. And then we did a podcast together called, Good Stuff. It started with Adam Clark and Tim Smith and I originally, and Adam Clark stepped out about a month ago, and then Kyle Roderick stepped in. And so, yeah, through podcasting basically is how we've all kind of met and kept up and got going with this. So
cool.
We all knew that each other was, you know, obviously interested enough in this medium to do it on our own originally. And so, it's been fun, challenging and fun, but just like running a business.
Yeah, of course.
So, but that's fun. That's good that you've been able to do in person. And have you had any issues as far as mixing, you know, you have your guest coming or sorry, your guest in studio and your co-host on Skype or whatever.
The biggest issue I had was on the last one, having the two mics in, like, cause I'm actually in my photo studio. So there's cement ceilings and wood floors and nothing on the wall.
Right.
So it's, I really have terrible sound in here, but, once you have two mics in that room, all of a sudden you get this like slapback from each one. So the person that is a few feet away, getting picked up in through the bleed, the echo is so strong that I couldn't like use the ducking noise gate wouldn't take out the other person. There was strong echo. So I was manually having to kind of ride the faders the whole time. So that was a bit of a mess if you're in a really bad noise room, which I am. But as far as like sending the audio in and out, I realized that this mix minus thing isn't that important if you're with somebody that you feel comfortable with, because Cameron just can hear me through the computer if I need to. I don't actually need to send him my real audio, and he doesn't mind or even really notice. So sometimes I've just let the audio that I'm recording for myself be separate from recording his audio, and that can be a really easy way to keep the clean different tracks of each of us.
Right. And then the one part I was wondering about is your guest in studio hearing what Cameron is saying. How are you managing to do that? Or does the Mbox have, you just do like a headphone splitter or what do you?
Yeah, the Mbox just kind of has enough outs.
Right.
It has like a monitor outs at the back and I send one of those to a headphone.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's it's funny how sometimes it's technically it can be easier to have people remote on Skype and things, and rather than have, like you said, with cables and cords and stuff, it's almost sometimes easier to have them be remote rather than in studio, because it just kind of complicates everything.
Honestly, it has been. It's been much easier. And I would need less gear if nobody was ever in studio, and I could always. But the challenge is, like, when I want to bring in guests, there's people I know in other cities I'd love to bring in, but they don't have a real microphone.
Right.
And it isn't, I don't want it to be distractingly bad. I don't want them to talk into their computer or into their headset. It doesn't have to be amazing. There's just this threshold, and it's like, as long as it's this good, nobody will mind. I hope for people to get to that level. So I've started considering, like, if you're going to promise to come on more than 5 times, I'll send you a super cheap USB mic from Amazon or something, because it doesn't take much. You can spend so little on the absolute cheapest mic you can find, and it's infinitely better than talking at your computer.
Yeah. Yeah, you should, I don't know if you listen to past episodes, but I don't have one yet, so I can't say that I'm using it and recommending it that for that reason, but just it's become very popular recommendation is the Audio-Technica ATR2100 is a USB/XLR microphone. It sells for, I think, about $60 on Amazon, and comes with a little tripod even. And is what I definitely would recommend in that situation. And
That's the one I look at. I listen to Ray Ortega's show as well. So
yeah, exactly.
He talks about it all the time.
Yeah, and that's when he, on that episode, like I've mentioned before, he switched halfway through from a PR40 to that one. And it's kind of like...
Did that make you angry?
Well, a little bit, yeah. I was kind of like, I don't want to know that. It doesn't sound that much different, really.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's he's coming in through Skype. And so there is, at least helps me sleep at night anyways. Right. But yeah, I know, I'm sure there's a few PR40 fans or owners who are kind of like, a little tear went down their eye as they...
You know what? I see people do that with photography too. You can do a comparison of there's a $100 50mm lens. That's kind of what everybody, it's like, hey, you're getting into photography, mm-hmm. go spend $100 on this lens and you can get blurry background photos. And it looks just as good as an expensive 50mm lens. This is a really common recommendation. I do it all the time because at a glance it does. But as you become more familiar with like working with a cheaper version and more expensive version of the same style of lens, mm-hmm. it is very obvious the difference. I don't have that same comfort with audio yet, but I'm hoping that difference is there as well.
Well,
I'm just not sophisticated enough.
Yeah. The one problem with that analogy, I think, is, and maybe somebody can email me and tell me where I'm breaking it down wrong, but if it'd be like, I guess you're taking your raw photo from your $5,000 camera and you export it and compress it down to like 30%. Compression or whatever in JPEG,
right, yeah.
And that's what you get to see. And then, can you tell the difference? And say, yeah,
because
we're compressing it down to MP3 here. And like, yes, you could tell the difference in some ways, but I don't know. I'm skeptical that
close.
We'll see. But I still sleep okay knowing I have a nice looking PR40 in front of me. And
at least it looks nice.
Yeah, if nothing else.
Have you seen Leo's gold?
Yeah,
PR40.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess there's always something to still lust.
Yeah, exactly.
There's always one step up.
And it is something where, like I said earlier, it's a hobby and it's an interest. And obviously, you know, that will determine whether it's something some people buy, whatever, really lots of 49ers jerseys or whatever your team happens to be and set up their home with all their gear and stuff. And I happen to set up my home with podcasting gear.
Yeah, exactly. I don't think there's anything wrong with it. People do spend a lot of money on other weird stuff.
Yeah.
I think it's more niche. It's not what they're doing, so it might seem weird. But it's what we're into, so.
Yeah, exactly. All right, is there any other, I think, covered all the sort of stuff that you're probably using there?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm looking at like the mess on my computer. the only other thing I'm still a little unsure of is I've still been recording everything internally to the computer, but then also externally to a like audio recorder, just because I'm really afraid of crashing.
Yeah.
And it hasn't happened yet, but when I hear about it happening, I would just hate to lose an hour because of a computer falls apart.
Yeah.
So I've been doing this like backup thing so far, but it's kind of a pain and I always want to do that. So
is that with the H4N that you use or what?
Your brother? The H4N.
Yeah. Yeah. That's something I don't have. And I've been curious about, I know I talked to Ray about that too, is some sort of portable, whether it's Zoom 5, H5 or whatever, both for backup on a regular podcast, but then having the ability to go into the field a little bit more too, if I wanted to do a in-person interview somewhere else or whatever, and not have to obviously lug a mixer and a mic.
Yeah. Well, they're getting more affordable all the time. So
Yeah, exactly. So I have the advantage with the live stream that we do. So just, I guess, for reference, if you happen to not be aware, at Good Stuff, we stream a lot of our shows live, and Show Me Your Mic is one of them. You can listen to goodstuff.fm/live. There's a chat room where guests can get feedback and things like that. For example, one listener told me that it was episode 19 of Show Me Your Mic that Bill Wadman was on, so it helped me out there. Thanks.
I will go back and listen to that.
Yeah. And so we listen live or record live. You can listen live. And usually this show records Tuesday mornings. You can check goodstuff.fm/schedule for the actual calendar to see in your time zone. I won't bother trying to explain time zones because I get screwed up all the time. So I think we're on the same, or we know we're different right now, right?
Yeah, I think we're one different.
Where I'm 11 o'clock, you're 12?
No, way. I'm 10.
Okay. Yeah. See, there you go.
That's why. Yeah.
That's why I have computers to do that for me.
Oh yeah, I know.
But yeah, if you want to tune in live, that'd be awesome. I'd love to have you as a listener that way. But of course, you know, the typical subscribe in the podcasts, all that kind of thing, in iTunes, etc. The last thing we cover on the show that is just listing some of the podcasts that you listen to, and also the apps that you happen to listen to them on. But before we get there, and I'll give you a chance to maybe grab your iPhone or whatever you happen to listen to them on, I just want to thank the second sponsor for Show Me Your Mic is A Small Orange. They have a simple vision, perfecting hosting while maintaining a homegrown feel with a focus on people, their customers, their employees, and their community. A Small Orange isn't like those big hosting conglomerates. They don't promise unlimited plans that are actually hindered by hidden limitations. Instead, you're only responsible for paying for the resources you need. Whether you're just starting your own blog or you're running a powerful e-commerce site, they have a plan for you. And before I could really recommend them, I wanted to try using A Small Orange myself. So I recorded a screencast of myself walking through basically setting up a website and domain registration, all that, you know, the stuff that if you hosted websites and built websites before are very common for you. But if you're sort of just getting started, I wanted to see how easy they were to use and sort of the comfort level of it. And I put that up on, I said, either the worst or the funniest domain, since it was free with my sign up at A Small Orange. Setting up WP for blogging and profit.biz is the URL. Setting up WordPress for blogging and profit.biz is what I decided to go with. And there's a YouTube video there of just my 30-minute, basically, from start to finish, getting WordPress installed on a brand new domain with A Small Orange. So you can check the link in the show notes at goodstuff.fm/smym/69 for how to get to A Small Orange. And thanks to them for sponsoring this episode of Show Me Your Mic. So, do you have a podcast that you listen to? You obviously mentioned Twit and a few others.
Yeah, this is my favorite part. I wanted to come on this show just to talk about how much I love everybody else's podcast.
I should just have a Show Me Your Podcast secondary show.
Yeah, we could have a whole show, Show Me Your Podcast.
Yeah.
Well, I'm a big fan of Overcast. It's the first thing that brought me away from the podcasts app, the Apple Podcasts app. The audio engine in it is amazing. Is that everybody would always mention things like the smart speed. Let me get through a lot more. Like something about the algorithm as it plays fast is listenable, and it's just something that nobody else has really gotten right. Even other apps like Audible's internal app, when you play it, you know, 1.5 times speed, does not sound great. And I really like the way that Overcast works for that. So I often listen to like news shows at, you know, like 1.5 speed, and then more thought piece shows a bit slower.
Do you do the I forget what he called it, the like gap skipping?
Yeah, that's the smart speed one.
Oh, that's smart. Okay. Yeah.
Which I kind of wish I could just apply that to my show.
Right.
Just make everybody listen to it with this on, and I swear it'll sound more interesting.
Yeah.
And then for shows that I'm into, well, Roderick on the Line is my, I get excited every time it comes on.
Did you order a shirt?
Yeah, and everything that Merlin does, I'm definitely a fan.
Did you order a shirt already for?
Oh, no. I saw a tweet, but I haven't looked at it yet. Okay. I probably should. A great show from BBC is No Such Thing as a Fish, which is part of the QI family. So it's just trivia. The talk show we mentioned, The Skeptic's Guide to the Galaxy, is kind of a like sciencey chat show. Twit, NPR. I just started listening to a show called Extra Shot, which is about video production. And yeah, those are them. I mean, there's many more, but I've been going through the back catalog of You Look Nice Today.
Oh yeah. That's always good to do. Is that your first time through, or are you?
Yeah, no, I had missed it. When Merlin disappeared from MacBreak, and actually, he kind of just disappeared to me. I didn't see him for quite a while. So I think that's when he was doing You Look Nice Today. And I finally caught up when, Roderick came on my radar. So
yeah. Yeah. It's a good show. That's another one where it sounds like it's done really well. Like they are all great talkers, but it also involves a ton of editing by Adam Lissagore, from what I hear. So
right, and that makes me feel a little better. But maybe it's okay to clean up your audio a little.
Yeah, yeah. I wonder what kind of rabbit trails and discussions get left on the sort of virtual.
Yeah, don't you want to hear the cutting room floor version? I've always wondered.
As they get progressively more liquored up, I guess, and things. So.
Yeah.
But cool. No, that's a good list. And you mentioned that one of your favorite part of this show is podcasts that are listened to by other people. Do you find the show notes way of listing them off helpful? I'm just curious from how I've been publishing my show.
I haven't ended up checking for that. I usually go to show notes if it's a lot of the time I'll use a show note when I like vaguely remember that somebody mentioned something 2 weeks ago. And I'm like, I know it sounded interesting at the time and I don't remember what it was called or what it was even about. And then I'll go back and check the show notes. And I do that all the time to find things. But if something sparks my interest right away, I'll usually just, Google it or make a note in my phone and then get it later or something like that.
Yeah. And that's what I find too, is I often use like the sort of Google site search on like, say, you mentioned 5x5 or where even for my own show where I know somebody mentioned some piece of gear, I'll just do a site search for that. On goodstuff.fm as a site, and then whatever the term was, to find it more so than remembering, oh, it was on episode 70 of, or I guess I haven't had that yet, but episode 60 or whatever, somebody said that, and or like finding Bill Wadman's episode, I probably would have just done a site search rather than trying to remember.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, most of the power of show notes, I think, is that obviously an audio format is really hard to crack into. Google can't see inside of it, so it's like it gives the it's a searchable version of your show. Mm-hmm. I actually, one time I tried doing, there's a site called Fiverr where you can pay people $5 to just do things.
Right.
And I had somebody transcribe one of the videos that I did just so I could, I edited it as like closed caption and I did it as a blog post just for fun to see what it's like. And it was kind of, I think it was a good idea. Like you can have a searchable audio version of your thing and it's, $5. I only did it once, but still think it was interesting.
Yeah. And that's a whole nother discussion too, is the transcripts for podcasts. And that's, I know something here, good stuff we've wrestled with is how to, at the scale that we're putting out shows, it's yeah. hard to do, but then it would be great. And then just also from the CMS and metadata kind of standpoint of how do you display that?
Yeah, that might be the biggest thing. I mean, or you could just play it out to Siri and let her transcribe it for you. And see what happens.
Exactly. That's not a bad idea. cool. All right. Well, where can folks find you and if they want to know more about your shows and what you do?
I think you can find most of it at stallman.com, which looks like a portfolio site when you hit it. There's a link to the podcast. There's links to wherever you can find me, Twitter, Instagram. I'm Stallman at all these things. So
nice. Or is that a Squarespace site?
Yeah, it is. Okay. And then the hosting is on Squarespace as well, which is pretty great, except the lack of analytics just kills me for the podcast. It's really frustrating.
Oh, is that true? Like I just published a blog post the other day about, hosting. People are asking me about hosting options for their podcast. And just on my personal blog, chrisenz.com, I'd post about that and mention Squarespace. I wasn't sure if they did analytics or not.
Yeah, not for podcasts. I can't even see a blip in my traffic since the podcast started, really. I'm running everything through PodTracker or PodTrack.
Right.
Yeah. And it's doing a decent job. There isn't a lot of documentation on there. Like it's hard to find some clear information, but they it works. I don't know. It's working. I do like the idea of like Libsyn's altogether thing, but it's just so much cheaper to have dedicated hosting that I don't have to worry about file sizes. I don't have to worry about how many episodes I publish. I can just put it all up there and it's going to work. So that part's nice.
Yeah. Yeah. So the file is hosted with Squarespace, but you just route it through PodTrack to.
Yeah, that's right. But then I lose the, I can't track any listens on like the blog on the, you know, on the show page.
Right.
So I don't know. I haven't been directing people to it because of that, because I wanted to see the numbers, but I don't know. Someday I'll find a solution to that.
Yeah. Yeah.
or Squarespace will, hopefully.
Yeah. And that's a funny one, just given how many podcasts they do sponsor that they're not, I'm sure if you pay them enough or if you're a big enough show, maybe you do get internal stats because then they want to sponsor you in turn or something.
Yeah. I know they care about podcasting. Like there's all sorts of functionality built in to support it, but I don't know. It feels like an oversight that they haven't done anything to address it yet.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And has it been overall, like you, I guess you kind of said, but has it been a good experience hosting a podcast with Squarespace? And
it has, yeah. I've been with Squarespace for a really long time for portfolio stuff. So, I mean, I recommend it to photographers a lot of the time as well. So that thing that I'm still just paying the same price to have my photo portfolio and the podcast in the same place is pretty great. I really like it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're not a great company, I think.
And has you switched over to, is it Squarespace 7 they're up to now? I forget, not that this is a
for them. But it felt like I got forced to upgrade. But I honestly think they do a good job. It's hard to learn each thing that they do to move forward sometimes, but right. I feel like it's worth it. They have really smart designers on board, and I don't kind of mind following them as they do these new things. I think it's worth it.
Cool. Okay. Well, thanks for coming by. Thanks for the last minute booking so I didn't have to do a whole show by myself.
No problem. Thanks, Chris. Thanks for having me on.
And my thanks to Campaign Monitor, of course, and A Small Orange for supporting Good Stuff and Show Me Your Mic. If you'd like to support Show Me Your Mic and my podcasting efforts a little more directly, you can do so on my Patreon, patreon.com/iChris. I'm iChris on Twitter if you want to follow me there. And of course, goodstuff_FM is where Good Stuff can be found. And Show Me Your Mic has its own Twitter account, SMYM_FM. If you've got thoughts, comments, questions, concerns about the show, I'd love to hear them as well. Twitter or chris@goodstuff.fm is my email address. For now, thanks for listening and have a great day. Bye.